the ingredients a little new school. Some soul. Preparations.
I ain't talking about no dollars. Preparations. And my people want their power.
A little R&B.
There's a limit to my love. There's a limit. There's a limit to my aching heart. How did I ever?
And a taste of old school. On moving. You're listening to Ujima 98 FM.
Hi, I'm Meg Cox and I'm a sustainable fashion stylist and runway event organiser.
And I'm Mary Miner, a singer, songwriter and performer, and you're listening to the Persona Power podcast.
The Persona Power podcast is about using sustainable fashion and self-care as tools to step into your confidence, protect your mental health and strengthen your identity.
Because when you know who you are, you can thrive anywhere, on stage, online, and in everyday life. Welcome back to the Persona Power podcast with me, Mary Miner. I'm a singer, songwriter, and performer.
Whoop, whoop. And me, Meg Cox, I am a sustainable fashion stylist.
Lovely to see you, Meg. How's your week been?
Lovely to see you too. It's been good. It's been busy at work and chill at home, which I think is the perfect combination.
Cool. You're looking gorgeous today, as always, and it's lovely to see you. And Meg and I, we're so busy that we barely have a chance to think about what we're doing on the podcast each week. But my loose theme for today is how credible do we have to be to feel incredible?
Ooh, explain. explain your thought process through that.
Sure. So basically, when I look back, because like the last couple of episodes, I've been quite reflective and I've been reflecting back on the last 10 years of my life. And there's one theme that I keep returning to with my career, and that is that I really want to coach people and help people. That's something that I always seem to return to. I really like the idea of coaching people who are up and coming in the music industry, helping them find their voice, helping them find their kind of values, helping them find their style, helping them find who they are as an artist. That's something that I'm really, really interested in. And I, for the last 10 years, this has been something that's kind of it been in the back of my mind. Sometimes I've been writing it down. I've had a lot of ideas towards this. However, I have always been like, well, I've kind of got to do my own music first, because that is how I'm going to be credible as this kind of teacher and guide.
Yeah.
And that's why people will want to come and learn from me. And yet, no matter how far I go down this music path, I never seem to get to the point where I think, well, now I'm credible enough to be incredible and for people to want to work with me. So that's the theme I'm bringing today. How about you?
What, in terms of the theme, or do you want me to respond to the topic?
Well, whatever.
So I just have a few sustainable news things.
Cool.
So there's just a couple bits that I will bring in a little bit later, I think. So yeah. I reckon we delve into this first.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
So I agree with you that you need like an element. You need the experience.
Yeah.
You need that credible. The credible experience in order to be able to, I think, train and support others going through that certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, I don't think that there's any problem with opening communication and support with people going through a similar thing to you at the same time. So I guess it's a difference between being able to train someone and then being able to almost body double with them. maybe.
Yeah, I see what you mean. So with what I'm trying to set up, there would be an element of body doubling as well. There would be an element of like, we're all in this together, doing this work together. However, I'm coming from more of a place of experience where like I've been through these courses where I've studied artist development, I've studied songwriting, I've studied music production, and I think I've got quite a lot to say about confidence too, mm-hmm. sort of coming from a place of, you know, extreme shyness, you know, building myself up to the point where I now feel confident and comfortable standing in front of an audience, even though it is still sometimes challenging. But I feel like I've come so far that I feel that I have some stuff that I can share in that sense.
Yeah, I think maybe it's about offering that service to people with the transparency around, you know, I'm enduring this, I've experienced this, I've got the knowledge of all of the things that I've studied and all of the things I've overcome. If you can help people get through the same thing, then you can do that, rather than pitching it just as a training platform in a way.
Yeah.
So it's about, I think it's all, life is always about transparency, I think.
I think so, you know? Yeah. Yeah, so it would be, for me, it would be more than a training platform. It would be, you know, a kind of coaching, because I feel that I have developed some self-coaching skills along the way as well, mm-hmm. which I feel like I can share. So it's about self-development. It's about self-development, and it's about encouraging each other, and then it's about skill sharing as well. So me like passing on the things that I've learned and the knowledge that I have, and then supporting and encouraging people to kind of come out of their shell, as it were, work out who they are from the fundamental level of, you know, what are my values, what are the things that I love, and who do I want to be, how do I see myself, you know, who am I becoming as well? Not just who am I, but who do I want to grow into being?
Yeah. Have you started creating resources?
I have got lots of ideas written down, but no. No, I haven't created the resources yet. Yeah. There's so many things to do in a day.
Yeah, and I think, like, with the ADHD brain, there's always so many things going on around it. And I think when there's loads of ideas bouncing around, it's really hard to make sense of it. And then within that, because you're not actioning anything, that's where... what's the word? Oh my god, it's just gone from my brain. where like self-doubt comes in, and then this question of, am I worthy of doing it or not?
Yeah,
I think that's where it comes in. So if you start creating the resources that you know that you have the experience and the knowledge in, I think that alone will help you to feel credible enough that, you know, you've worked and you've worked through all of this. You know, your first draft is not going to always be the one that you put out, and you're going to teach yourself a lot about the process and what you've learned just from reiterating it on paper, or figuring out the best way of how, you know, people are going to digest that information. And I think just working on it will allow yourself to feel more credible about what you're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, oh yeah, I can use that thing that I've already created. So actually I do have some resources. So for example, I have like a daily planning sheet, and it's like it's a place where I can put my ideas. It's a place where I can do my self-reflection. It's a place where I can do my dreaming and manifesting and you know, just literally setting my intentions of not just what I want for the day, but what I want for my life going forwards. And that is something that kind of underpins everything that I do. And then, you know, it's like creating meditations. I have all the resources to be able to do that, to create meditations where, you know, you can create a meditation to get somebody into a creative space, or a visualization where the person gets a chance to kind of relax and then dream themselves into who they want to be. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, it's exciting and it's fun and it's creative work. And I think it's just, you know, I can share the work that I've done to get me this far. But there is still that self-doubt of, like, should I be further along before I launch this? And also, am I just getting distracted from doing my music? Is my brain just making excuses to stop me from following this path? Because I've got to the point now where, I looked at a rehearsal space. I looked at an amazing studio space the other day. It's beautiful. It's in this old church in Bedminster. And it's just got everything I could possibly want for rehearsing, recording, writing sessions. And it's really exciting. And I'm looking at maybe renting this place
amazing.
Out.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I know. And I've booked a gig as well for my little jazz band that I'm putting together. So that's coming up. And then I've had... my first rehearsal I'm forming some different bands, so I'm going to have like my depth band, and that's kind of coming together, and then I want my band A, so I need a band A, a band B and a band C, so you know, everything's kind of happening, it's all happening. But whilst it's all happening, I'm thinking, am I supposed to be doing this? And I'm kind of questioning myself again, maybe like I shouldn't be doing this, maybe I should be moving on to the next phase. Is it just my brain going, you're not good enough and you need to, now you need to do that? I don't know.
I think, well, music is your passion. It's the root of what you're doing and what you love to do. It's got a lot of sentimental value with your family as well. And I think ensuring that that's a main focus is really important. And then maybe instead of look into the like resources that you want to create as a major part of your energy outlet at the moment, instead, as you're working through developing these bands, as well as you're experiencing booking all of these gigs and things, maybe when you come up against something that you are reminded is a major tool in your toolbox for how you accomplish that, then create the resource there almost as a reminder for yourself. Mm-hmm. And then at a point where you have enough energy to put into that, that's where you can convert that into a usable resource for other people. Just an idea.
Nice. Yeah, I like that idea. Yeah, thank you.
It is really hard to make sense of everything when your brain is going at 1,000 miles an hour all of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as somebody with ADHD, I have to remember to kind of rein myself in sometimes and be like, okay, is this just me having this crazy idea right now because I'm distracted from what it is I'm supposed to be working on?
Yeah, it can. And sometimes I find it hard to distinguish the difference between me procrastinating ideas and my actual ideas, because my procrastination just comes in when I'm up against hard things, and then all of a sudden I'll be doing something completely random. It's sometimes like in the mornings I'll write my to-do list for the day and I'll end up doing something that's not even on it. Like, what is that about? It's like my brain is always trying to rebel against myself.
Yeah.
And it's about, trying to work alongside it rather than against it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, anyway, so that's what's been going on in my crazy brain this week, which I love. I love the fact that we can come here and kind of talk through what's been going on in our heads over the last week. But yeah, what else is new? I had my lashes lifted.
Lovely. I was thinking that your eyes look very bright today.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. How does that work? How does a lash lift work?
Well, it's actually kind of weird and a bit painful.
What? How? Tell me more.
Well, you kind of think it's going to be really relaxing because you're lying down on this couch. And, so I arrive at the place and she lies me down and she gives me a blanket and, something to prop up my knees. And, she puts on some nice music. And I just thought she was going to put the stuff on and then I was just going to lie there. But no, it was... I mean, I couldn't see what was happening, by the way.
Okay.
And I didn't want to keep asking her what was happening because I was kind of trying to relax. But, that she puts these things on your eyes. So she does... She puts something there on above your eyebrows or under your eyebrows, rather, to just kind of hold your eyes in place. And then she puts this thing on your actual eyelashes. So I could just feel that, she'd kind of pinned my eyelashes up. And she was doing things to them. And it was just like non-stop. She would do this and then she would do something else and then she'd apply something else. But it gets right into... Like at one point I started squeezing my eyes tightly because I could feel this kind of stinging chemical going into my eye. And it was just really uncomfortable and quite painful. And then she was like, no, relax your eyes.
Oh,
I'm like,
God.
Okay. And then she was telling me that she had had this Korean lash lift. And she said, when you get that done, they actually turn your eyelid kind of inside out so they can get right down to the root
of your... sounds like a torture technique.
I know, right? It was quite uncomfortable. And then at the end she showed me the mirror and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, they're quite lifted. And then when I got home, and maybe it's because the lighting in my flat's not that good, but I was looking in the mirror and I was going, I can't see any difference, I can't see it. But then when I put my mascara on this morning, I was like, now I can see it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'd go and do it again. Because it was a bit like torture. I mean, I'm only having it done because I'm going on holiday. And I thought, oh, it'd be nice because then I can just kind of get up in the morning and not have to put makeup on. And not that I have to put makeup on anyway. I shouldn't feel like I should have to put makeup on to go and
gorgeous.
Lie by the sea.
Oh, my God, I'm so jealous.
Aw. Well, I don't know if the weather's going to be that good yet. We'll
be better than here?
Well, I hope so, yeah. Yeah, it will definitely be warmer than here, yeah.
Do you want to let the listeners know where you're going?
I'm going to Tenerife.
Yay!
I'm going back to Tenerife. It's my third time going to Tenerife.
Are you going to the same place, or are you going...
Yeah, I'm going to the same area as last time.
Great.
It's called Puerto de la Cruz. It's in the north. And the weather was fantastic when we were there last time. I mean, when we arrived, it was like 26 degrees. And then it got a bit cooler towards the end, but we had pretty good weather most of the week. I mean, it was a bit changeable, but it's a mountainous area and it's a tropical kind of region, I guess. So it does get a bit cloudy sometimes. But yeah, it's just such a beautiful place. And we loved it last time. What we loved about the north was it was less touristy.
Mm-hmm.
And we found all these local swimming spots.
Cool. Natural swimming spots.
It was in the sea, so it's by the sea, but there was like this port. So there's this actual port, and because the sea in the north is a lot rougher, so lots of people go there for surfing. But there was this area where they had a port, and so it had quite high walls, and all the locals go there to swim, and they just jump, and it's really deep, and they just jump in, and there's loads of places you can get in. And yeah, it's really cool. And then like a little bit along the coast, there's another place. I mean, there's beaches as well, but the beaches are harder to swim because of the roughness of the sea. But there was another place which was kind of, it was just loads of rocks and it was kind of built up slightly. But it was a really good spot for swimming because of the way it was protected from the waves. And then there's another kind of man-made pool thing, but it's like a lagoon. It's like a man-made lagoon and it's right by the sea, so you can, I think it's like €6 to go in, and you just pay and go in, and you've got a lounger, but you can see, you're right next to the sea, so you can see everything going on. It's beautiful, really really beautiful. But then there's loads of stuff to do. You can go quad biking, and you can go kayaking. I think we're going to go kayaking this time. Last time we went out on a boat and went whale watching.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Did you see any?
Yeah, loads. Absolutely loads. Yeah. And then there's this ancient rock formation, which is like, I think it's like 8 million years old. It's called Los Gigantes, and it's formed by volcanic lava. So we went to visit Los Gigantes. But this time, because we didn't make it up there, we were going to go quad biking last time at... on Mount Teide, which is an active volcano. I think it's like one of the second biggest volcanoes in the world. And we couldn't go on the day that we planned to go because it was the weather was a little bit wet that day. So when we went to do the quad biking, they said, no, it's too dangerous to go up the mountain. So we had to just do this off-roading instead, which was really amazing, by the way. It was amazing. But after doing the quad biking, my whole body was just like, I just ached all over because I was on the back of the quad bike and I was just like clinging to my boyfriend for dear life because it was like, whoa, it was so bumpy. And then my whole body was just like so stiff and sore afterwards.
That sounds fun though.
It was really
fun.
It was really fun. And there's loads of other stuff you can do.
Do you know what you're going to do this time?
We're definitely going to go up the volcano this time. Because, you know, just get to the top and it's all snowy. And yeah, it's beautiful.
I went up Mount Vesuvius.
Yeah.
This was quite a few years ago. But when I went... there was like nobody around, so I was like, this is gonna be amazing, like there's not a lot of tourists around that day. And the reason was that it was just thick fog up there, so I was walking up Mount Vesuvius and I would not have been able to tell you that I was by a I was walking up a volcano, yeah, other than the fact that it smelled like eggs. But it was kind of spooky because there was like nobody around,
yeah,
like you're just on your own,
wow,
walking up. And it's like thick fog, you could barely see in front of like, yeah, your hand in front of your face, and it was spooky, but I loved it. I prefer, yeah, being in places without those people around, you know? Even though I didn't see the view or anything, but that's fine.
Yeah, oh lush,
it's all part of the fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is,
you know.
So next week, because I'm going to be away,
mm-hmm,
Meg is going to be flying solo, yes, doing the show.
Yes, I will be. I will obviously miss you, but I have some very fun things to chat about. I've been doing some research and creating some resources myself around how you can fall in love with your personal style.
Ooh, obviously, I love that.
It's in the lead up to Valentine's Day, so it'll be on, I think when it airs it might be just after Valentine's Day, but it's all love. We love love all the time.
I love love, yeah. I know, that's why I'm going away, because my partner really likes Valentine's Day. He's the first boyfriend that I've had that really likes Valentine's Day. Well, no, that's probably not true, but, you know, I've had a couple of boyfriends in the past that are like, oh, I have to do something just because it's Valentine's Day. And I'm like, well, no.
It's not the attitude. It's not the attitude nor the energy to have around.
You don't have to do something, but
it's
just
fun.
Why wouldn't you? You know, yeah, it's fun.
Like, I absolutely agree. I love being a romantic.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
I love soppy love things. I think, why not, isn't it? If you care for that person, then show it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you? I remember there was one year that my mum has always reminded me that one year when they were courting, my dad sent my mum 7 Valentine's cards.
Oh, so sweet. Why 7?
I don't know. But I remember her showing me them and me being like, oh, that's really sweet. Aww. I wish, I don't know where they would be, but if I could have them, I would love to have them. That would be something I'd treasure.
I love keeping cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I collect all of like the cards that my mum gives me. My mum loves to write like paragraphs and paragraphs in her cards, and we also get like a card on Valentine's Day, we get a card on Easter, I've got so many of her cards, and it's just so sweet, and I love it. And it's just like, even though like it's just a card, it's not, because there's lots of like her and her handwriting I love,
yeah,
and you know, I think it can, like, any gift can be whatever you want it to be, but I think adding that element of her and like adding the writing, I think it was, yeah, it's lovely. I love it.
Oh, I got this card that my mum wrote, and it's so sweet because it was after she got diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and she wrote me this really sweet card, and it was about Mark Twain, and she said, oh, have you met Mark Twain? Or read any? She said, have you met Mark Twain or read any of his books? And I was like thinking, oh, bless. So, you know, that's really, really sweet. So, yeah, that's a card that's sort of bittersweet in a way, because it's quite sad, but it's also quite funny at the same time.
Oh, that's just so pure and honest, isn't it?
Yeah. And there was one year that my mum actually bought me 4 cards. Like, she'd found these goddess cards, and she was like, you know, my gorgeous goddess daughter, and she just wrote all these cards, and it was a different message in each one. Oh. So I've kept those, but I do find that, you know, I don't want to hoard everything. So yeah, I do tend to chuck things a bit more nowadays. But I've still got cards from my great granny and a tiny little writing, and yeah, it is lovely to keep cards, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. And just keeping mementos of people and of experiences is important. Like, I'm such a collector. Like, I love collecting little things and little objects from when I go on holiday or go on something. Or, like, if somebody gives me something. Or, like, I'm such a collector. It gets to a point, though, where I need to cull some stuff because I have stuff everywhere. But it all means something.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
I think if you love things, absolutely, just to hold on to it. Why not?
I have one more topic that I want to bring today, which is that. So yesterday I was supposed to go to Jazz Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jazz Workshop, and for some reason I find it more of a struggle to get there in the winter. It's a weekly event that goes on Bristol on Tuesday evenings, but run by Bristol Jazz Collective. And I've learned so much about jazz music by going, and I absolutely love it. So yesterday I was planning to go, I was intending to go, and then I just kind of hit this point at 4 PM where I was just suddenly struggling and I was really tired. And I literally just crashed. And I tried to struggle through, and then about 5 to 5, I just realised that I needed to have a nap, so I went to bed. And then I woke up about 5:40, knowing that I wanted to go because Jazz Workshop started at 6. But I hadn't had any dinner yet, and I was still feeling really groggy, and I had to make that decision to not go. And it got to about 7, and I just had that really horrible guilt of, I'm not living up to who I want to be, and I'm not, you know, I felt like I'd let myself down. And then I was having this battle within myself of like, I feel like I've let myself down, but at the same time I wasn't feeling up to going, so why am I beating myself up?
I think guilt and shame are two emotions that can consume us and are not necessarily the most constructive things to feel.
Yeah.
And I think that you made a decision that benefited you.
Yeah.
You know, you needed to rest, you needed to eat. These are like primary things that you as a human need.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't feel guilt nor shame about not living up to what you think that you should be.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you made a decision that benefited you and that you needed.
Yeah.
So I think release yourself of that negative feeling.
Absolutely.
Because it's not getting you anywhere.
No.
Instead, it's actually not allowing you to rest because you're feeling that.
Yeah.
So it's almost counterproductive to dwell in that feeling. And I think if you're able to get up and go, then amazing, go for it. And there is a point where if you were just like feeling a bit tired and you could have gone, you were up and you'd eaten. And I think at that point, that's a good time to push yourself to go out.
Yeah.
But when you were feeling like that, like you needed to rest.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's true. It is true, because, I mean, once I'd made my dinner and I'd sat and eaten my dinner, it was then 7, and then I was like, well, do I go now and turn up late? But at that point, I was still digesting, and I was kind of feeling like, well, now I'm at the point where I could be there, you know, and I could push myself. But then I was like, by the time I get there, I'm going to have missed half the session. So I just made that call not to go, because obviously I have to pay for the session as well. So if I'm going to go, I want to pay for the whole session and get my money's worth, really.
Mm.
So anyway, it is what it is. That's just something that I sometimes go through and feel. And I think in these darker months it is. And yesterday it was just so wet and rainy and cold.
Yeah, it was really cold yesterday.
Really cold yesterday. And the day before it was just bitterly cold.
Yeah, yesterday I was out sourcing clothing for styling sessions, and I'd forgotten to like bring my gloves with me, and I was walking around with my little shopping trolley.
Oh.
And I was so absolutely soaked as well.
Oh,
just going
bless
from
you.
Charity shop to charity shop, which isn't really that far.
Yeah, it's not.
Trying not to like get any of the clothes wet as well. Oh yeah, it was grim. I don't like the rain.
No.
I don't like the wind either. I just want sun. Sun, please.
Sunshine. More sunshine. Well, we're not that far off now, are we?
No.
It's February now.
Exactly. Spring is en route, isn't it?
And that's the other nice thing about Valentine's Day, just returning to that point, is that it's something to look forward to in the middle of Feb.
Exactly.
It's right in the middle of Feb. February's a short month anyway. Gives us something to look forward to. And then once that's over, like, it's only 2 weeks till March.
Yeah. Exactly that. I love spring. I'm a spring baby, so that's my time to shine.
Yeah, you're a May baby like me, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. yeah. May is the it's the best. It's like the perfect little like middle ground between spring and summer. Like it's getting really warm and all of the flowers are out and I love it.
It's the lush time of year.
Yeah.
I can't believe we've come to the end of our first segment already.
I know, crazy.
But keep it locked to Ujima 98 FM.
Yeah. thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks, and we'll be back with more of the Persona Power podcast after the news. And you're bringing a topic in part two, aren't
you? I've just got a few little news points just coming from the sustainable fashion industry, so it's some positive things.
Lovely. Well, I look forward to hearing that in the next segment. So we're going to take a little break now and we'll see you guys very, very soon.
Information is empowerment. The news from Ujima Radio, brought to you by Way of Ground News, a platform that aggregates news sources, alerts to media bias, and breaks free from algorithms.
The World Bank Group has officially opened its new energy-efficient offices in Kingston, Jamaica, which will serve as the hub for its Caribbean operations. The building brings the bank's Caribbean team together in one physical space, which will strengthen the institution's presence and support in Jamaica and the wider region. In 2021, the World Bank moved its Caribbean operations from Washington, D.C. to the island as part of a strategic shift to decentralize functions to the field offices. Ambassador Audrey Marks commended the move by the bank, commenting that it is a visible statement for long-term partnership, trust, and shared ambition between Jamaica and the World Bank, adding that the World Bank has been a key development partner, noting the impact of the institution's support in building the foundations of a modern digital economy and a strong institutions with capable systems. The World Bank supports Jamaica's development through a 2024 to 2027 framework, focusing on human capital, economic growth, and resilience. After almost 2 years, Haiti's Transitional Presidential Council handed power to the US-backed Prime Minister Alex Dijé-Fils-Aimé on Saturday. The 9-member council stepped down as it failed to curb the growing risk of gang violence, and its 2-year-long term was marked by food insecurity, corruption accusations, and political infighting. This has left the Caribbean country in political limbo, as Fils-Aimé as the country's only politician which executes power. In late January, several members of the council admitted that they were seeking to oust the prime minister, even though the US threatened serious consequences should they do so, and it threw its weight behind Fils-Aimé. The US also said the council must relinquish power and has imposed sanctions on 5 council members. Days before the council was dissolved, the US sent 3 warships to the capital, Port-au-Prince, 90% of which is now under control of gangs. Fils-Aimé now faces the task of filling in the political vacuum and organizing elections in Haiti, where the elections has not been held since 2016. Trinidad and Tobago Public Utilities Minister Barry Padaraf said that the ruling United National Congress is playing no role in the general election in Barbados. His comments follow statements by Barbados Prime Minister Mia Motley that the leader of the main opposition Democratic Labour Party, DLP, Ralph Thorne, had appeared on the state-owned Trinidad and Tobago television, indicating that yellow is the code. This is a reference to the UNC campaign slogan during the April 28th Trinidad and Tobago general election last year. Motley told supporters of her ruling Barbados Labour Party, which is seeking an unprecedented 3rd consecutive clean sweep of the 30-member parliament, that her party would not be subservient to any of the parties in Trinidad and Tobago. Motley also dismissed reports that her party had been taking advice from Andrew Holness, Jamaican Labour Party, adding she has been to Jamaica on numerous occasions to address the opposing People's National Party's convention. Padaraf sought to distance Trinidad's United National Congress from any involvement in the campaign for the general election in the sister CARICOM country. Padaraf said that the outcome of the election will be respected by the government of the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. Fighting in Sudan's southeastern Blue Nile region has once again put Ethiopia in the spotlight, reviving uncomfortable questions about whether Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government is quietly helping Sudan's paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, in their war with the Sudanese armed forces. The latest flare-up came recently when the RSF, fighting alongside the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North, SPLMN, launched coordinated attacks on three strategic locations and overran the town of Demi-Mansur. The offensive came on the heels of rapid battlefield reversals on the 26th of January. SAF units had retaken positions in Bao County. Within 24 hours, RSF and SPLMN forces struck back, pushing in from the border areas near Ethiopia and South Sudan. A senior Sudanese official accused Ethiopia of directly facilitating attack, claiming that RSF and SPLMN fighters crossed into Sudan from Ethiopian territory near Yabes, along the Blue Nile frontier. He added that the armed drones used in the fighting were launched from Ethiopia's Beni Shigal Gomaz region, from bases linked to the United Arab Emirates. Connor Trumpold, an analyst at Control Risk, a security and strategic intelligence firm, says the picture on the ground is murky, adding that they haven't been able to confirm presence of an RSF or SPLM camp in Ethiopia. And finally, the Ghanaian government has suspended a program through which those who could prove African descent could obtain citizenship. The suspension is intended to revise the necessary bureaucratic procedures following several complaints about the cost of the process and the short time it took to complete it. It has not been announced when the program will resume. Ghana has offered this option called right of abode for years. To access it, one had to prove one's genealogy through official documents or DNA tests and pay the equivalent of approximately €2,000, among other fees. The president also attended the citizenship award ceremony. Among those who have received citizenship in this way is American musician Stevie Wonder. The initiative stems from the Pan-African ideals, formed to enhance unity among all African people, promoted by the first president of independent Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah. It's aimed primarily at those descendants from people kidnapped in Africa and sold into slavery around the world during the modern era, between the 16th and 19th century. Benin, another West African country, has also launched a similar program.
That was the news from Ujima Radio.
Hi, I'm Meg Cox.
And I'm Mary Miner.
And you're listening to the Persona Power Podcast
on Ujima Radio 98 FM.
Hello, welcome back to the Persona Power Podcast with myself, Meg Cox.
And me, Mary Miner.
Yay! We have just been chatting today, haven't we? We've gone through topics about holidays, Valentine's Day. What else have we covered?
We talked about how credible do you have to be incredible.
Yeah. And then that feeling that you get when you don't live up to or you don't arrive at certain things that you've planned and how you can positively work through that feeling. So I have come today with some news from the sustainable fashion industry, because last week I brought some news from like high fashion runways. So I thought I'd balance it out because I love sustainable fashion. It's a part of me. It's a major element of my business and my passion. And I thought I'd just bring some topics. So in the first quarter of 2025, France reported that their highest retail revenue came from the secondhand fashion industry. So that was 10% of all retail sales.
Wow.
Which is wild. That came before Amazon. That came before like all of like H&M, all of the big like retailers. The secondhand, and it was mainly Vinted that made that money.
Oh.
Crazy, right?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We need another platform to rival Vinted, I think.
Absolutely. And of that 10%, within the Gen Z generation, it was 16% of their outgoings was going to the secondhand fashion industry, which I think is just it's amazing, and it also showcases the weight of what the sustainable fashion industry has, and it's such a huge part now, I think, of everyday shopping.
Yeah,
and I am just curious, like, how that is going to affect the high street. because obviously, like, I am a part of the high street. My shop is on the high street.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm just wondering, like, what do you think, what do you think the next, like, 5 to 10 years of fashion looks like?
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because obviously we've seen some major retailers dying out recently. I mean, we have lost the Debenhams that was in Broadmead. I mean, Topshop has died a death, hasn't it? There's no more Topshop.
I think it's been bought up again.
Okay.
I cannot remember who by, but it's by an online... Is it maybe ASOS? Do not hold me by this. I can't remember. I should probably know this. But it has been bought up by an online retailer, like a big online retailer.
Yeah.
It could be ASOS.
Mm. But, you know, but the high street is dying out, though, isn't it? Like, lots of... I mean, we... Sometimes I see empty units and I think, oh, what could we do with that? But, you know, I just feel like a lot of high streets now are getting more populated with cafes and restaurants rather than shops, because so many people shop online now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much cheaper to shop on places like Vinted.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, I mean, secondhand fashion is more affordable, isn't it? So I'm not really sure what the future looks like. What I'd like to see is more flea markets.
That's what I'd like to see. They're really fun.
I mean, we have the M32 flea market in Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we don't have that many vintage markets. I mean, there's car boot sales, but there's St Nick's market.
Yeah.
But... it's quite a small market, really, in the scheme of things. Yep. And other than that, what do we have? I'd like to see a massive market right in the middle of Broadmead. I'd like the whole thing to be market stalls.
Well, do you remember when the Christmas market used to have that bit at the end that was all local makers and stuff,
uh-huh,
rather than it being a part of, like, all of the standard stalls?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I think it would look... cool to have something like that, like a local market. I know that what's it called, the market, I think you just told, you just said the name, St Nick's. They have a market outside there sometime on a Saturday or a Sunday, don't they?
yeah that's
which
on
is
the street,
quite good. But having more of those and having, like, more places like Sparks would be amazing,
because
that does give an opportunity for small businesses to have a brick and mortar store, because I think at the moment it's just so hard, so expensive, mm-hmm, for businesses to get a premises.
Yeah.
I think that's another challenge that is there. I don't think that the high street will ever die.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people enjoy shopping.
Oh, we do, you know? Obviously, yeah.
People make, you know, an event of it, and it's fun to go out with your friends. I also just love trawling the charity shops on my own with my headphones on.
Yeah.
Just really getting into a zone, looking for the cool stuff. This suit that I'm wearing is from a charity shop find yesterday.
Oh,
and it's amazing.
It.
So it's a... it's a fine houndstooth pink and blue wool two-piece suit, skirt suit. And it is amazing.
It's gorgeous.
It's so good. I saw it yesterday and I was just, obsessed with it. And I think, like, that joy of finding something and trying it on and it being perfect, I think there's, like, a lot of joy in that. And I think shopping online does lose a part of that.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, I have to say that I get a lot of joy from going to the charity shops as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a bit of a rule when I go charity shop shopping, and that is that if it's not love, I don't buy it.
Yeah, I like that.
And if it doesn't fit perfectly, I don't buy it. And I had this, so I went and I found a dress a couple of weeks ago when I went to Marlow. Marlow's a great little town near Slough. And I went there one day because it's not too far from where my boyfriend lives. And we went there and I found this dress and I absolutely loved the dress, but it was at the back. There was this little bit that wasn't quite sitting right. And I was like, right, it's not perfect. I'm going to leave it. And even as I was putting it back, I was having these pangs of like, I need this dress. And I was like, no, I'm sticking to my rules.
No.
And I actually ended up going back.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
If it sticks in your mind and it's still there, it's meant to be, right?
Well, it really did. And actually, what was really helpful was my boyfriend did a little video of me when I tried it on. So I did a little twirl, and he, and as we were looking back, he was like, look, you don't even notice that bit.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you're right, you're absolutely right. So that's why I went back and bought it. And I, and now, and then I wore it to my 58th Street night that I told you about last week, and just had a wonderful, wonderful experience of wearing that dress. And I was just so glad, because there was that part of me was like, oh no, someone else is going to buy it. It's not like there's loads of them on the rail. It's the only one.
Yeah, I know. That's my rule with it is if I find something and it's a like a one in a lifetime thing, I've never seen anything like it before, I've like I will probably never come across something like that again, that's when I'll get it.
Sure.
That other than that, if it's something that I've maybe seen before or something similar, then I'll tend to leave it. If it's a one off weird thing, that's mine.
But you have the advantage of you've got a shop.
Yeah.
So if you don't end up wearing it, you can just stick it on the rails and sell it to somebody else.
This is true, but I like to think of it as it's a circular way of shopping.
Yeah, and, definitely.
And I have put in a lot of my own wardrobe into my shop.
Yeah.
If maybe if I don't wear it, there's no point in it being there.
Yeah.
And I always make sure to pick up like high quality pieces that are unique, and I like to think of my wardrobe as quite fluid in that, you know, there's a few pieces that I will wear and wear again, or a few pieces that are sentimental to me, so I'll hold on to that. But if it's not sentimental and if I'm not wearing it, then I want somebody else to enjoy it, you know.
I'm thinking of doing little clothes sales around at my house, like, you know, maybe like a swap and sale.
Cool.
So some pieces that I'm happy to swap, and then like the good pieces, just like, no, I'm just gonna but sell it for like what I paid for it. Do you know what I mean? Like not sell it for like a profit, but just sell it to my friends, because like I'd rather see my friends wearing it.
Yeah.
You know, and actually get something back from it than you know, give it away and have, because it's an expensive business as a singer songwriter. I'm always looking for outfits to perform in, and it gets a bit pricey, you know. So that's why I buy secondhand.
Yeah,
is because of the affordability of it. But I'm trying to find a way of circulating it that isn't too time intensive, because I think for the seller, the process of photographing, listing, packaging, you know, cleaning, ironing, all of the stuff that you have to do to get your clothes prepared for sale online is such a massive big deal. And then having to, you know, take your clothing, you know, wrap it nicely, take it to the post office, follow its progress during delivery, and then have to deal with queries from the buyer. Maybe they're not happy with it. Maybe they want to send it back. It's actually so labour intensive in terms of like, and it's so bitty in terms of the process that you have to do to sell that way, that it's just not for me. I just don't think I don't think my time is well spent selling clothes that way.
Yeah, fair enough. I think vintage is probably the easiest way to sell, and you're the most protected as a buyer as well on vintage.
Seller, you are not protected in the same way. Yeah, that's what I discovered with vintage, but that's a story for another day.
Okay, we can explain. Well, I mean, like, yeah, every I guess there's always risks with most selling platforms, isn't there?
Yeah.
I always found that selling easier on Vinted than I did on other things.
It is easy until your parcel goes missing.
Oh,
but
dear.
That's another story.
Okay, I didn't like that.
eBay is better at protecting its sellers.
I think selling prices on eBay tends to be better as well.
Yeah,
I think because it's less of like a trendy place to buy and sell on, I think.
Yeah, but, yeah. Absolutely.
But, yeah.
We have come to the end of the second segment, and I have to say goodbye to Meg.
I know, I'm sorry, I have to leave you. I've got to head over to my shop and set up for a styling session first thing this morning, so I'm going to have to leave you. I'm going to love and leave you.
That's okay. If I was on time, she would be able to stay, but I was late because like the traffic was horrendous this morning. What can we do? But I will be here for the final segment of the show, and Meg will be with you next week.
I will. You are going to hear me for a whole hour next week, and I hope you don't get sick of my voice.
I'm sure they
You'll
won't. All right, guys, we'll see you shortly.
Bye.
Wednesdays on Ujima Radio. I love feeling on her tongue. What my needs each and every single Wednesday. No joke, kidding up. Almost running. Trust me, if any man tell you say you're ugly, you know. Shine bright like a diamond. Tell them say you're beautiful like a diamond in the sky. Beautiful like diamond. Oh, you mean?
All them there, we all them there, did ya. All them there, we all them there, did ya. All them there.
Pick up on my 90s.
Come and screw up them face.
90s crew right now.
You ready? Yes. Me ready. You ready?
Yes.
I'm ready. Come here straight, ready, ready, not a lean, ready, ready, not a punk, not a junk, not a idiot, ready, ready, you ready?
Yeah. Dancehall Generals with DJ Mega and Selector Doc. Wednesdays, 8 to 10 p.m. here on Ujima Radio.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
When?
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. That's so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
Yeah, this is Danny Stevens and you're listening to Ujima Radio. Empower, educate, entertain, inform. Ujima, we are you. We are Ujima.
You're listening to the Persona Power podcast with Mary Miner.
And Meg Cox. This is a podcast about identity, personal style.
Also self-care and mental well-being as armour for both online and offline life.
Tune in on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. on Ujima Radio 98 FM.
Welcome back to the Persona Power podcast with me, Mary Miner, flying solo for the last segment of the show because Meg had to rush off. It was one of those days we pre-record this show and she'd said that she needed to leave at a particular time and I said, right, I'm going to make sure I get there early because I'm quite often a little bit late. So I got up early this morning, I jumped straight in the shower, I washed my hair. I was on time. I had time to blow dry my hair and everything. And then there was just so much traffic as I was driving here this morning. So Meg has had to leave us a little bit early today, so sorry about that. But I want to revisit the theme that I brought up at the start of the show today. So I want to talk about credibility versus confidence. So when I mean, I've been doing music all my life, but when I started about 10 years ago, I started thinking about revisiting music because I've always done music. But it had always been kind of in the background. And the reason I started thinking about training more in music and doing more music was because I was thinking about going forward into mentoring, into coaching, into teaching. And I thought, if I can just, you know, record my album, something I've always wanted to do is record an album. And I thought, well, if I can get that album recorded, it's going to give me credibility as an artist. So it was more about being taken seriously than it was about, actually being an artist and being seen, and it wasn't so much from my ego. It was more to just, you know, I need to be taken seriously as an artist first so that once I'm credible enough, then I can share what I've been doing, share all my secrets, share all my techniques and be a leader. But then as I've gone along this journey, it's like, at what point do you decide that you've done enough? At what point do you decide that you're credible enough? At what point do you decide that you're ready to move into that next phase? And I think a lot of it is to do with confidence. It's to do with developing that kind of quiet sense of who you are and trusting in yourself and knowing that you are enough. And it just takes time to get to that point. I've done a lot of work on myself. I've come from a place of growing up, I was quite a shy person and I was involved with music from quite a young age. And I would go into studios and I would hit the light switch in the recording booth so that nobody could see me because I trusted in my voice. but I didn't want to be seen. I never really wanted to be seen. And that was why I got into radio as well, was because I like being on the mic and I feel like I have something to say, but I don't really enjoy being seen all the time. And it's interesting because having to step forward as an artist and be a musician is quite a challenging thing, because you are being seen. You know, you're standing up on stage as a front person. People are going to see you. People are going to judge you. And then also being on social media as well, having photos taken, having videos taken. I put out a little snippet on my socials yesterday of me performing live, and it's a little promo video for my live act. And I just feel so, it's like the feeling of vulnerability of, oh wow, that's not a good angle for me. Oh, I should have worn some tummy smoothing pants. You know, maybe I need to get my teeth done, or maybe my hair could be better. And it's just that constant feeling of self-judgment and lack of self-worth when you are out there being seen. And even now, with all the confidence that I've built in order to be able to stand up and feel brave enough and confident enough to be up on stage, I still feel that crushing vulnerability, and that, you know, being exposed is not a very comfortable place to be. That said, I do feel that I've got a lot that I can say about confidence. Like, I've learned about communication skills and body language, and learned to feel confident in my clothing, and developed a kind of image that I'm satisfied with, that I feel good in my skin, and I enjoy being me as well. So yeah, it's really, I'm questioning myself at the moment. Like, at what point do I decide that I am good enough, that I am enough to step forward in the next phase of my career? And I think it's actually, at the moment, it's boiling down to the fact that I don't really feel ready. But then, when do we ever feel ready? When do we feel ready to start the things that, you know, define us in life? I guess we never feel ready. I guess we're always going to have those feelings of self-doubt, I think. And I think being confident as well isn't about always feeling it. Sometimes it's more being it than it is feeling it. And so, you know, these are the things that I struggle with as an artist, as somebody who is out there being seen, who, you know, posting my image on social media, and making these videos and making these shows as well, and having my voice be heard, like feeling like I've actually got something to say that people may be interested in. Hopefully people are interested in. And I still have those doubts, and I still have those fears, and I still feel held back by the stuff that I've always felt held back by, you know, as I said, the natural shyness. But I think self-reflection is really important, and looking back and saying, oh yeah, look, 10 years ago I hadn't achieved that, and I hadn't achieved that, and those were the things I was thinking about then, and maybe I haven't achieved everything that I set out to achieve, but I've certainly come a long way. And actually, look what I have achieved. I haven't actually, for example, haven't put my album together yet, but I have I have released 9 singles. I mean, I've released more than an album's worth of songs in my life, but they just haven't sat together as one complete project. And even now, I'm looking at recording an EP rather than an album, because maybe people don't listen to albums anymore. But I still, that is still my goal. That is still something that motivates me going forward, just as on a personal level, of something that once I've released that album, I do feel that at that point, I will probably be ready to do the coaching, do the mentoring, or maybe I'll be ready before that. Maybe I don't have to wait to that point to feel credible. Maybe I am credible. Maybe I just need to start telling myself I am credible. And as I said, how credible do you have to be incredible? Well, I think it's about self-belief. I think we have to tell ourselves that we're incredible, even if we don't believe it. And I do a lot of affirmations. And one thing I've learned is that you have to choose your words carefully. You have to choose the words that your brain will believe. So one of my affirmations is that I'm filled with unshakable confidence. Now, sometimes I'm wobbling and that unshakable word does not feel true. So at that point, I tend to drop that word and I just say I'm filled with confidence. And sometimes it's more of a calm confidence rather than a fully like strong, unshakable confidence. And so it's like adapting those words, because I think if we tell ourselves things that our brain is not going to believe, then we reject them on a subconscious level. We're kind of going, nah, that's not really true. That's not real. What are you going on about? So I think it's, affirming ourselves in a way that makes sense.
This is Unique, the owner of Unique Led Developments. You're now locked into Ujima Radio. Tune in and get groovy.
Here